Hello, and welcome back to Voices of Student Success, Inside Higher Ed's podcast series on student retention, engagement, and graduation strategies. I'm your host, Ashley Mauriter, student success reporter for Inside Higher Ed. Thanks for joining us today. This series is a companion to our Student Success Newsletter, a weekday publication that provides ideas and inspiration for higher education practitioners who work in or care about student success. This is the final episode of our Back to School series, which is designed to help you, the practitioner, be prepared to tackle a variety of student success-related topics. Over the past 8 weeks, we've covered basic needs and security, career readiness in the classroom, improving the first-year seminar, and raising up mentors on college campuses, among other ideas. Today, we're taking a look at generative AI in the classroom. The term ChatGPT may send shivers down your spine, but over the past 2 years, generative AI has blazed its way onto college campuses, first in the students' hands, and increasingly in the hands of administrators and instructors to improve campus operations and enrollment management, as well as in teaching and learning. One of the greatest challenges of using generative AI in teaching is providing students with skills without interrupting the process of learning or introducing errors in the process. The University of Texas at Austin is in the initial stage of launching a custom GPT model called UT Sage, which serves as a tutor of sorts for students who need help related to a specific course or want to advance their learning on their own. I spoke with Julie Schell, Assistant Vice Provost of Academic Technology at UT Austin, to learn more about the tool, her work with AI in the classroom, and teaching the ethics of AI use. Here's Julie.
This episode of the Student Success Podcast is sponsored by KI. Supporting the development of world-class learning and campus environments has been and always will be at the core of KI. The KI team has built its reputation for excellence in education for over 70 years, working shoulder to shoulder with educational partners to develop a roadmap for a future of innovation. Learn more at ki.com/the key.
Well, Julie, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Ashley. It's great to be here.
Just to get us started, can you introduce yourself to our listeners? Who are you and what is your role at your institution?
Sure. My name's Julie Schell, and I'm the Assistant Vice Provost of Academic Technology here at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm also an Assistant Professor of Practice in the Department of Design and Educational Leadership and Policy, and I teach classes on design pedagogy. A little bit about me is that I study how people learn complex subjects, and I started off in educational psychology studying how teachers adopt technologies in their classrooms. I did a four-year deep dive in a physics lab where I studied how people learn physics, and then I did a five-year stint learning how people use design, and over the past couple of years, I've been focusing on how to help people learn AI.
That's awesome. I need you to teach me how to learn physics because I failed my AP physics exam. So we'll circle back to that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, I could help you with that. I think what I've learned across all of these journeys is that anybody can learn a complex topic. It just what matters is the teacher and the setting and the environment. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
How did you get started in the AI world specifically? When did you start studying that?
Well, I teach class, like I said, called Design Pedagogy, and I had been working on AI starting in about November 2022 with the launch of ChatGPT, and things on campus had started to ramp up around that. And so I'd been working on some generative AI conversations and policies and thinking about how we were going to respond to the generative AI sort of craze here at UT Austin for about 6 months. And then things got really real in the summer of 2023 because I had to teach my own class in the fall of 2023. And I know that AI is really important in design, and I felt I would be doing my students a real disservice if I didn't know what I was talking about. Mm. I spent about 20 hours teaching myself how to use Midjourney and code in Discord to develop generative AI images with a tool called Midjourney and really understand it for myself and do some real deep dives into it so that in the fall semester of 2023, I was prepared to help my students navigate these, what I think are pretty ambiguous waters.
Yeah.
So I would say that I had both contexts where I was working on it from a policy level as an administrator, but then for myself, I felt I owed it to my students to understand what it is, how to use it, and what they needed to know about it connected to our own learning outcomes.
Yeah, totally. I think that's been the challenge for faculty members where it seems like AI can circumvent work for students and it can be a great supplement to help them in their careers and lives after college, but it can also, like I said, kind of take shortcuts in the learning and teaching process. Yeah. In your work and how you have been thinking about AI, where are you sort of seeing those two themes of AI use in the classroom being weighed and discussed?
Yeah, I mean, look, AI is full of paradoxes. So one of the really interesting things about AI from a teaching and learning perspective is that it can teach you almost anything, right? But it can also teach you bad information and it can teach you wrong things. Mm-hmm. It can speed up your work and really help you be faster at producing work, but it can also make you look really sloppy. It can help you feel more creative, but it can also make you sound like everybody else. And so I think it's really important to recognize these paradoxes and talk about them with students and really articulate clearly what is the learning outcome for this particular class or this particular teaching concept that we're working on? And what are ways in which using AI could foster learning of that topic? And what are ways in which it could inhibit or negate learning of that topic? And why might you not want to do that? And I think it's really important as a faculty member, as a teacher, to be clear on that myself, and then to articulate to that to my students and help them become the architects of their own ethical blueprints about how they're going to use AI or not.
Yeah, I love that. Architects of their own ethical AI blueprints, because I think that is ultimately what we're trying to empower students in all facets of higher ed to do, is to learn and take those tools to make their own decisions. We're not trying to make carbon copies of students or faculties, but helping them on that journey is really hard, especially like you mentioned, you have to educate yourself on these issues so you can be an informed expert or at least have some sort of knowledge about these issues. And that can be a challenge as the tools evolve and grow. And the landscape of AI has become so complex as well.
Yeah, for me, so when that semester started, I had really clear AI policy in my syllabus. And I talked with students about this policy on the first day of class. And in one of our first projects, students have to design user personas. And in the syllabus and in my conversation, I talked with them about how to cite generative AI use in our class. And this is dependent. A lot of people ask me, how do you cite generative AI use? It depends on the discipline. Mm-hmm. But in design, there are some precedents. And so I taught them those precedents. And so the policy was, you can use generative AI as long as you cite it. So I got one of my students' user personas, and it had a really well-designed image that really helped me get the feel and have empathy for the particular user. And there was no citation. So I gave the student the feedback about how effective I thought it was and well-designed it was. And the student just said, oh, I used generative AI to make that. And I really was shocked. I was surprised because we had talked about it and we had gone through and we had done demonstrations on how to do the citation. And I realized it wasn't as if the student was trying to hide that they had used generative AI. And in that moment, I just realized that the ethical muscle that people have around using generative AI, it doesn't have as much strength and resilience as our ethical muscle around plagiarism. Mm. Look, all of my students know not to plagiarize. You know not to plagiarize. I know not to plagiarize. Sure, some people still do it. Some students still do it. But we know when we take someone else's work and we try to pass it off as our own, that is academic misconduct and that is plagiarism. We have a really built-up muscle for that we've developed over our lifetimes. But with generative AI, I don't think that ethical muscle is built up in the same ways. And so I believe as a teacher, it's my job to see academic integrity as a process and to approach that with curiosity and to ask, why was that still confusing? what can I do to help that student understand where did things go wrong? And we had a conversation about it and it worked out really well. And I think that if you look at things that students are saying right now, you'll see that 70% really do want to have AI in their classes as part of their lessons and as part of the instruction that they're receiving. But what they care about is learning how to engage with the ethics of AI. I don't think they need to know how to use the practical aspects of AI, but they want to know how to use it responsibly and ethically. And so for me, that was in a really important moment. And it's shaped what I'm doing both as a teacher, but as well as what I'm doing as a person responsible for guidance around AI implementation and teaching and learning here at UT Austin.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's a good transition into sort of the larger institutional efforts that you all are making around AI. So you have this new, is tool the right word, UT Sage, that you all implemented. Can you kind of give us the story behind that? Where did this come from?
Sure. So I was, as you've probably been able to tell, I like to experiment a lot. And I really like to try to learn something that I've never been exposed to. I try to teach it to myself first, because I'm interested in how people learn complex things, right? And so when the custom GPTs became available, within the second that they were available for public use, I built a custom GPT. Wow. And I built the custom GPT to do something that I teach in my class, which is how to write a good learning outcome. And when I saw what it produced, I literally like shot back from my desk and I thought, this is going to change. This is going to change everything. Wow. And I immediately sent the GPT to my boss and he was like, okay, we're onto something here. So from that moment, we started thinking about how we could empower other educators across the university to develop these custom tutors to help students work through. And we're focused on our topics that they often struggle with or that they find difficult. And from that, Sage was born. And I can walk you through a little bit more about what Sage does and how Sage is unique and not just a regular custom GPT that you might find on one of the various tools that are available.
Well, yeah, please just tell us more.
Sure. So I think I'll start with thinking about, you had asked the question about what are ways that generative AI might further learning and what are ways that it might negate it. And so one of the things that we think that generative AI might be really good at is helping address what we often see in classrooms, which are prior knowledge gaps. Mm-hmm. So when you come into a class, there's a couple things that determine whether you're going to be successful in that class or not. And one of the central predictors is the quality of your prior knowledge, right? And so oftentimes when students come into a class, they will enter that class either with missing prior knowledge or they'll enter that class with incorrect prior knowledge. And those are both sort of gaps. At the same time, you might also have students that come into your class that have an abundance of prior knowledge and they're far more advanced than other students. So when you come into that class, you face this sort of challenge. And what you have to do as an educator is you kind of have to teach at the middle or a little bit to the left, mm-hmm. right? In order to address this spectrum of prior knowledge, you kind of have to teach a little bit to the left of that curve so that you kind of cater to everyone. But then the students who are at the very tail end of both get a little bit left behind, right? And so one of the things that we are thinking about with Sage is, are there ways in which Sage could potentially help students, particularly those students who have these prior knowledge gaps and maybe aren't as confident to come into office hours or ask questions? Maybe they still find, because the gap is so wide, when they get a response to the question, they're still confused. Are there ways that we could engage them and help them strengthen that prior knowledge using generative AI? And are there ways that we could help students? We have a faculty member who's using Sage whose students really want to learn fringe topics, but the faculty member doesn't have time to teach the students the fringe topics. So they're working on a tutor to help students learn fringe topics. So you can kind of see both of those spectrums. So what we're doing with Sage on the student side is trying to find a way to engage students in developing and addressing some of these prior knowledge gaps in a way that kind of meshes with how people learn. When a student logs into Sage, what they're going to see is a typical text-based chatbot interchange. So we've got a tutor right now on a topic called logistic regression. The student comes in, the faculty member has pre-prompted some questions, four starter questions that the student could click on, depending on where they're at. So it could be, what is logistic regression? Or it could be, I'm really good at logistic regression. Give me some really tough questions that I could practice with. So student has some autonomy on where they can choose on which of those that they want to pick, or they can type in a prompt themselves. One of the things that we've programmed Sage to do in response to that, so if the student says, what is logistic regression, is to be more Socratic in the responses. So not just to give a definition and leave it at that, but to start engaging the student in some of that powerful Socratic questioning. So for example, if you ask Sage, what is logistic regression? Sage might reply with a definition, but then say, have you ever needed to predict the outcome of an event? And then let the student answer that. And so the student might say, yeah, I've wanted to predict the outcome of a race, for example, or a sporting event. Mm-hmm. And then what Sage would do, say they say soccer, Sage will actually walk them through a soccer that's relevant to them and help them understand logistic regression in the context of that particular example, which is great because one of the things we know about prior knowledge is that learning something new, it really benefits when you can connect into something that you already know. And Sage is kind of functioning in that fashion from the student side of the chatbot.
That's super cool. You talked about this a little bit earlier, but sometimes AI can feed, or generative AI tools can feed students misinformation if they're searching Absolutely. For things. How have you and other faculty members tried to add those barriers to make sure that Sage is only providing accurate and helpful information to the student and not hallucinating or sort of going off the rails?
One of the very first things that we've done is we have a responsible AI and teaching and learning framework that we operate from. And that framework involves sort of these big six limitations of using generative AI. So the first thing you see when you enter into Sage as a student is you see a disclaimer that AI makes mistakes and that there are important limitations to AI, and you can click on a link that will direct you to this thing that we call the big six limitations. So that's one way, is to transparency is the key, and to always remind people that there are limitations, not just hallucinations, but there are other limitations that we want people to be aware of in order to engage responsibly. But the reality is that we actually think that generative AI does not pose the challenge of our students' lifetime, but I actually think that dealing with ambiguity does pose the challenge of our students' lifetime. Mm. And it's not just AI where they might get bad information. They might encounter implicit bias. They might encounter security and privacy concerns. They might encounter misalignment, which is different than a hallucination. It's when the AI gives you something that you didn't ask for. And so we think it's really important to teach students to evaluate and critique the output. And regardless of whether you're using the top model or you're using a model that maybe has more difficulty with those kinds of things, is to always be critiquing and evaluating the output, and not just of generative AI, but anything that they come across, being really discerning critics and not just adopting that wholesale. And this is a concept in education called keeping the human in the loop. So we train students to make sure that there's always a human in the loop, not just on the input, but also on the output.
Yeah, absolutely. Not every student or every faculty member at every institution trusts AI yet. Have you had conversations with your students or with your colleagues about how to make sure that these, again, we talked about like you can't trust AI completely, but helping them feel like AI can be a co-partner in this work?
Mm-hmm. I definitely think there's a spectrum of readiness for using generative AI in institutions among students and faculty. And I think it's really important to meet people where they're at. I actually think it's pretty healthy to not have full trust in generative AI. I think that's really important. It means that you're actually at a higher level of readiness. Mm-hmm. We call this being AI forward and being AI responsible. So we want people to use the tools, but we want to use them in a way that has clear awareness of these big six limitations. But one of the best things that you can do is to experiment. So whether you're an AI skeptic, you're anti-AI, you're AI agnostic, you're AI forward, you're AI experimental, the best thing to do is to use generative AI for at least 15 to 20 hours And I'll tell you, when you start to do that, you will have an awareness. So the first hour or so, I'm sure you experienced this yourself, Ashley, but when you first started using it, I know when I first started using it, it's so seductive. Mm-hmm. I was at a family event and I was so enthralled with using Midjourney to produce images that I basically told my family, I've got a work call that I have to do. So I'm going to be a couple hours. And I just went into the back room and I just kept producing images and using Midjourney to do this because it's so seductive and so amazing. But after about 15 to 20 hours, you should come to a huge insight, which is that, and this is what I want every student and every faculty member to know, but really the students, is it is not better than you. Mm-hmm. It might be faster. It might have access to a bigger knowledge base, but it doesn't have your experience. It doesn't have your voice, and it is not you. And when I share that with my students, I find that they are able to make the really effective ethical decisions, responsible decisions about their use. And so I think that's what's the most important thing when you're talking with someone who is really not trusting it.
Yeah, I love that. What kind of feedback have you heard from students using UT Sage and the tools in general?
So one of the really cool things about UT Sage is that it's still in proof of concept right now. So mm-hmm. one of the things that we've been doing is that we operate from a human-centered design framework. So we believe the customer is always right. So Sage is in closed beta right now, which means that it's a small set of faculty and a small set of students. And I got to be the first person to test Sage with my students on a topic that we were studying. And it was really exciting to see, you know, they thought there was a lot of potential, but they had a ton of feedback about things that weren't working. One of the things we got feedback on was that it was too Socratic. Mm. So it just wasn't answering any questions that they were asking. And so that feedback helps us sort of tune, like, we don't want the direct answer, but this is a little bit too much Socratic questioning.
I can imagine Sage being like, 2 + 2 = 4, but what do you feel about this number? Like, how does this make you feel?
Exactly. The other thing that we found during this test is that there was an accessibility problem. One of the students couldn't read something due to an accessibility issue in Sage. So we got feedback on that and we're able to fix it. So we've gotten really good feedback from the students in making improvements to Sage. And we've gotten feedback about the potential that something like Sage could offer. The sort of killer app around Sage is not necessarily the student-facing part of it. That's important too. But if you've ever built a custom GPT, you'll know that the tool will ask you a series of questions to help you build that custom GPT. So what we've done with Sage is we've actually programmed Sage to ask the faculty member a set of questions that are aligned with everything we know about effective teaching. So Sage is also, in addition to being an AI tutor, is a instructional designer, a virtual instructional designer for the faculty member that focuses on learner-centered pedagogy. So the first thing Sage will ask is, okay, what's the topic? Because we need to know the topic to get the model going. But then the next question that Sage will ask is, who are your learners? Hmm. What do they need? What are the common challenges or difficulties that they face with this particular topic? And then Sage will ask, how do you help them get through those difficulties or those struggles? What are some of the tricks of the trade that you've built up over your career as a faculty member to help students move through those misconceptions? So that's the first question. The second question is, Sage will ask, what do you want students to know? What do you want them to be able to do? And what attitudes do you want them to have about this particular content? And then Sage will ask, how are you going to assess? So how should I know whether the student is able to do those things? And then finally, Sage will ask for resources. So faculty member could upload lecture notes or they could upload a reading. And we're working on being able to upload other types of media in the future. So I think that is something that's really special about Sage is that it operates as a virtual instructional designer that's sort of baked in key principles of learner-centered pedagogy.
Yeah, I love that. It's almost like you're training Sage to be a TA and to know sort of what the faculty knows and how they teach.
Yeah. And that's a great analogy because just like any TA, you know, Sage isn't going to have the same knowledge as the faculty member is going to have, but they're going to be custom trained by the faculty member themselves.
Yeah, that's awesome. When it comes to future goals with teaching with generative AI or learning alongside Gen AI, where do you see in your crystal ball things moving, or what are your hopes?
So my real hope is that we get a real firm understanding about what responsible AI use is for teaching and learning. I think we need to be really transparent and clear about how to use generative AI in ways that protect our students' privacy, that protects their security, that protects their intellectual property rights, and also encourage and support academic integrity. And so I think that once we get the responsible AI framework for teaching and learning in place and solid at our institutions, then I think we can move to a place where we're using generative AI to further learning, like filling prior knowledge gaps. Another thing that generative AI can be really good for is helping you engage in metacognition. A lot of people think metacognition is just thinking about your thinking, but it's way more than that. Metacognition is really gaining awareness of your learning state. Mm. So if the topic is logistic regression, prompting you to try to take a moment to figure out where you're at. Like when it comes to logistic regression, are you at a 0 or are you at a 10, right? Well, I'll tell you, I'm like at a 1 right now on logistic regression.
-5, personally.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So if we can use generative AI to do things that we know from 100 years that are like these really potent ingredients in learning science, and we can get that into a tool like Sage or other generative AI tools that can promote these really effective behaviors like engaging in metacognition, because what happens next after you become aware of your learning state, that you will then self-direct. Most students will then self-direct or self-regulate their learning, which is really the holy grail, right? If you can self-direct and self-regulate your learning, then you're going to be a successful learner. So I think that the future for me in using a tool like Sage or generative AI is really tuning it to be aligned with the ways in which it meshes with how people learn rather than in the ways in which it could negate how people learn. And I think that's a really, it's a personal and disciplinarily dependent decision.
Yeah. As we're talking, I'm sort of thinking about, I know Sage is in the beta state right now, but the data that Sage can use both mm-hmm. to inform its own work and how it's engaging with students, but also faculty members in the real time and in the real world experience, if you will.
Yeah.
Have you all considered how that data can both inform teaching practices, but also inform Sage?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things that we'd love to do, so this is a feature request, and maybe by saying it now, the tech team will really want to do it. But one of the things we'd really like to do is be able to give the instructor like a heat map or a report of the areas in which the students are finding confusion or they're particularly finding difficult. So that's sort of a wish that we have, so that the faculty member can spend time during class working on those more complex needs with the students face to face. So that's a wish list that we have for Sage. The other wish list that we have for Sage is to be able to tune based on student response. So using data, for example, using the student's responses, let's say that you have a student that's asking a question about logistic regression that's just, they keep asking for examples, and Sage gives them example one. And then the students, I don't really understand that. Can you give me another example? And the student says, well, is it like this? Can Sage start to be more empathic when the student is demonstrating that they're struggling and showing a lot of confusion? And on the other side of the coin, if the student is really getting it and can tackle anything that Sage throws at it, can Sage potentially become more challenging? And I don't mean from a personality standpoint. I mean from a topic standpoint, like a challenging instructor and giving the student a sort of harder tasks to be able to achieve. And so I think using the input that the students deliver, those are two of the things that we're thinking about wanting to do.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a little complex to code, but it would be super engaging and exciting for the student to be able to sort of see those pathways it diverges on.
Definitely. And then nobody gets left behind either. And I think that's what's really exciting about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that this is something I think often when we talk about these generative AI tools or accessible resources, we're thinking about the student that's struggling on their own. But I also love the idea that it can be for the overachiever who wants to just keep digging into it and really has enthusiasm for it. They don't need to find that on their own. They can use these tools to continue learning, because that's what we want, is for our learners to keep learning.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I always coach my students on, and actually when I do have a couple generative AI lessons, lesson plans that I've developed and that I use, is I always use a mixed method approach. So for example, in my class, students have to write a statement of teaching philosophy, but they've never heard of what that is. They don't know what that is. They've never seen one before. It's kind of confusing. What's the difference between a statement of teaching philosophy and a cover letter? You know, it can get confusing. And so one of the things that I have students do is use generative AI to help start build up some of that prior knowledge, but then actually do primary research and secondary research that they would normally do with respectable resources, and then compare and contrast to develop that really sticky knowledge that I want them to have. So I think for students who are really advanced, they will naturally take that advanced mixed methods approach, and we want to encourage all students to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I could talk to you all day about this, but we don't have all that kind of time. So, Julie, thank you so much for chatting with me. It was great learning from you.
Thank you so much, Ashley. It was great being here.
And a very big thank you to our listeners for joining us today for this episode of Voices of Student Success. I'm putting a bow on our Voices of Student Success series for the holiday season, but don't worry, I'll be back in January. For now, that's all for this episode. I'm Ashley Marieter, and I'll see you real soon.